CBS, Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Ukraine conflict. I go immediately to Colonel Jeff McCausland, my guide on what we see on the battlefield and what we can expect. Jeff is U.S. Army retired artilleryman, CBS News, Diamond Six Leadership and Strategy, the CEO, and Dickinson College, a visiting professor in the Keystone State. However, we turn to the headlines from Europe because they tell the story in their fashion. For example, the Minister of Defense of the United Kingdom, Ben Wallace, no solid decision on Britain sending fighter jets into Ukraine. The President of France, Macron, draws Russian anger with absurd comments about fighter jets, the Mirage fighter jets that France produces. Boris Johnson, former Prime Minister touring the United States, suggests that Mr. Sunak, who is now Prime Minister, should forget about Putin and send fighter jets to Ukraine. At the same time, from Kyiv, we're told that the Russian offensive is expected momentarily. What that looks like? Unknown, but the preparations are underway. Last week, it was main battle tanks were in dispute between several NATO nations. That decision was made. They're now in train in some fashion. This week, it looks to be about high-performance warplanes, F-16s, and their like in NATO. Jeff, a very good evening to you. How to measure this Russian offensive is imminent. Are the warplanes necessary to blunt a Russian offensive? And do they give Ukraine a capability of winning this war and recapturing Donbass? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Obviously, from the Ukrainian standpoint, they would be very, very valuable and could be critical in the ultimate success of the Ukraine. That being said, transferring them to Ukraine, even if the decision was made today, would not affect the outcome of the counteroffensive by the Ukrainians upcoming or the impending offensive by the Russians, because it would be many, many months until such aircraft could be provided, and the logistical sophistication to sustain those aircraft would be nearly monumental. So I don't see this happening anytime in the future. That being said, as the Ukrainians appear to try to blunt this offensive and prepare for their own, what they really desire, of course, is more range with their weaponry. With the HIMARS, they've got about 40 miles of range. They would like to have the ATACMS, which would give them about 160 miles or more of range. Fear on the part of the United States and other Western allies would be that would allow them to strike targets on Russian soil, which might then result in escalation. In the upcoming announcement in the next few days of a new military aid package, we will, however, provide them the ground-launched small-diameter bomb, the GLSDB, prepared by Boeing. That kind of seems to split the difference, and it will provide them a range up to 90 miles with a glide-based bomb primarily launched by an aircraft. This would allow them to interrupt Russian supply lines, which will be critical to the Russians in mounting that upcoming offensive, and perhaps also allow the Ukrainians to strike some of the sites, particularly, I think, in Crimea, that the Russians are using to launch missiles with devastating effect on Ukrainian cities. And we saw that even today in Kramatorsk.
You speak of artillery weapons, so I understand what the HIMARS is, High Mobility Artillery Rocket System. But there's the Guided Multiple Launch Rocket System, the GMLR. What is that, Jeff?
It's a track vehicle we would call, you know, rocket in a box that we used with great effect during the Gulf War when I was in command. Now, those have been transferred to some of our European allies, and the Germans have provided them the M270 launcher, which they can launch the GMLRs from. But the box for the HIMARS with rockets or the GMLR, either one of those can be put on either of those launching platforms. So it's a similar but older multiple rocket launch system to the HIMARS with about the same range, 40 to 50 miles.
From the beginning of this standoff between the two forces, it's said that Russia has the vast weight of artillery over and against Ukraine. Is that still accurate? Do these new weapon systems give Ukraine a force multiplier?
To some degree, they do give them greater force multiplier, but of course, it's a matter of the numbers of platforms and our ability to provide them ammunition, which has been an increasing concern. It's unclear to me, based on the rates of fire, that even with the amount of ammo we provided them, that they may still be in short supply. That being said, on the Russian side, we know the Russians have lost an awful lot of artillery, and there is clear evidence the Russians themselves are not able to sustain the resupply of ammunition. At one point in time, John, there were reports the Russians might have been firing up to 60,000 rounds of artillery on a single day. In the recent days, that has dropped off very, very significantly, even around areas where we see heavy offensive operations like Bakhmut. Even when it comes to missiles launched against Ukrainian cities, Today, for example, when they struck the city of Kramatorsk, initially they used their Excalibur missile, or their Iskander missile, which is one of the more sophisticated missile systems. But that was followed by a second barrage in which they used the S-300. Well, the S-300 is an air defense weapon, and therefore using it in a surface-to-surface role is pretty doggone inaccurate. And we've seen the Russians use older weapons, even those that were designed back in the Cold War, to take out aircraft carriers in Dnipro. So it seems they're now using more and more older, less accurate missiles, which suggests their arsenal of very precision-guided weapons is dwindling.
This talk of a Russian offensive, the Battle of Bakhmut has been going on for weeks. The Russians keep saying we're almost. The order from Vladimir Putin is to capture Donbass by March. What does Bakhmut represent to Russia? Is this the foundation for this so-called offensive they're ready to launch?
No, I don't think so, John. I think Bakhmut has taken on much more of a political symbolism for the Russians, really in two ways. One, as we rapidly approach the first anniversary of this war, since this has been a focal point, I think they want to make a success there so they can end this particular first year and say, hey, we've had some success. And then secondly, of course, it's demonstrated this sort of competition or friction within Russian military forces between the Wagner group, who were largely responsible for a lot of the offensive operations for the last several weeks and have taken tremendous casualties, as Yevgeny Prigozhin tries to trumpet his own position and that his forces are superior even to the Russian army, and the Russian army, criticized by mill bloggers and the like back in Russia. But in the last week or so, there's been reports due to the large-scale casualties that the Wagner group has taken, that the Russian army now is taking over more and more of the forces in and around Bakhmut. So it also has demonstrated that internal friction within Russia and its armed forces.
I'm reminded from my reading of the Russians when they were Soviets, this is an army that emphasizes deception. Fakery. We're going to hit here and then they hit there. Or we're going to build an army and what they build is a fake army to fool you. Is there any evidence of that? Because this talk of a Russian offensive, it also uses the number 200,000 Russians. Do we see them again fainting here or fainting there, Jeff? What can we tell?
In Russian military doctrine, they call that maskarovka, which is deception. And there's real concern that we may see that playing out as this Russian offensive begins. I'm still convinced the primary focal point of the offensive will be the Donbass, trying to secure fully Luhansk and Donetsk province. And there's some suggestion Mr. Putin has given the orders that he wants Donetsk secured by the end of March. At the same time, we've had this conversation about perhaps an offensive coming out of Belarus, and we've had Russian military exercises in Belarus. That, to me, may be part of that deception you're suggesting, John, because it forces the Ukrainians to devote some forces, to their northern frontier, thus thinning out their lines down the Donbass. I think it's possible as the Russian offensive begins, we could even see so-called spoiling attacks coming out of the northeast in the direction of Kyiv or even Kharkiv, not with sufficient forces perhaps to take those two cities, but forcing the Ukrainians again to pull forces from the south to protect those areas, and thus making the effort for the primary operation in the Donbass for the Russians at least, hopefully a little easier.
The Ukrainians repeatedly say, give us more weapons, give us more tools to win the job. Have they got what they need now, Jeff, in your measure?
What they need is longer range systems. They really need, I think, the ATACMs, which would give them about 160 miles of range to hit those resupply points, tear up transportation networks, and endanger those missile platforms the Russians are using to strike Ukrainian cities. Obviously, they need these tanks and armored personnel carriers like the Bradley, the Martyr, et cetera, and they need those as quickly as we can deliver them. But I think the one thing that we have to think through, John, is as we have provided them, we the West, more and more sophisticated military hardware, it's going to be becoming increasingly difficult for them to sustain that. I believe the next big choice by the West may not be aircraft or more sophisticated military equipment. It may be, are we willing to allow foreign military contractors, some of whom might be Americans, to be positioned forward in Ukraine to provide logistical maintenance on this equipment to keep it in the fight longer and longer, particularly as these Patriot batteries arrive, and we need those to stay in the fight continually. When Afghanistan collapsed, and I was covering that, and you and I were discussing it, it always seemed to me the failure in Afghanistan at the end was not when the last American soldier left. It was when the last foreign contractor left, which meant that the Afghan Air Force and Afghan Rotary Wing Force was then totally neutralized.
February 24th is the one-year marker. Does anybody expect, expect Russia to do something spectacular that day?
Russians like anniversaries. I think it's not impossible. They certainly could do something militarily, focused on hopefully having Bakhmut by then. Could they launch another very large-scale missile barrage against Ukrainian cities? Certainly would be my suggestion for the Ukrainians to consider that a very, very distinct possibility. I think they'll probably do some things politically. Behind the scenes, we know the Russians in those areas they occupy in Zaporizhia, Crimea, Luhansk, and Donetsk have been trying to institute things that make these places more Russian, forcing people to use the ruble, changing the time zones, changing education systems, bringing in people to be local political leaders who obviously are very loyal to Moscow. So I think you might see some of those things going on in the background, because the 24th of February will be very important for them. It actually underscores their failure, because, of course, the expectation was this war would only last a few days. So they've got to do something to make this look like a success.
Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army, retired, CBS News, Dickinson College, Diamond Six Leadership and Strategy. We're headed to the Pacific, NATO in Asia. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
We all make choices. When it comes to alcohol, kids make choices whether to drink or not.
Bye, Dad.
Bye-bye.
Remember, I'm going to Alex's party tonight and sleeping over.
Hey, Em, have a seat for a second. Remind me about that party again.
And adults make choices whether to talk about it. That's true of parents and every other trusted adult in a kid's life. Kids want to know our expectations when it comes to alcohol and other drugs. They want guidance and honest answers to their questions. And it makes a difference when the message is consistent and part of everyday conversations. So talk with your kids and help lead them on a positive path. Because when you talk, they hear you. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.